All right. Well, welcome to the first episode of Courtney Combos with Zach Courtney and Brian Whiteman. Brian, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm doing wonderful. Currently, it is 11:15 at night. We are sitting in a car at the high school, and it just seems like these are where we have the most intelligent conversations. So I figured it made the most sense for us to talk here. Yeah.
I totally agree. I feel like we've had plenty of these.
So, and we got Faith in the backseat just sitting here just listening to us being our perfect audience like she does. She's just not even paying attention to us. So what we're going to be talking about today, for the most part, is basically just education. What works, what doesn't work, what's screwed up, what we like, what we don't like. We're going to start off with playing I Sued the School System by Prince EA. Hopefully some of you have heard it. Maybe some of you hadn't. From YouTube. It's spoken word, poetry, whatever you want to call it. But he does a really good job. Really kind of just of voicing what I think. And I think a lot of what you think about the world of education right now. So before we get too deep into it, we're going to go to that. I'll just let you know first. The only rule of our discussion is that there are no rules. All right? That's it. Let's roll the clip.
Albert Einstein once said, "Everybody's a genius. But if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will live its whole life believing that it is stupid." Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, today on trial we have modern day schooling. Glad you could come. Not only does he make fish climb trees, but also makes them climb down and do a 10-mile run. Tell me, school, are you proud of the things you've done? Turning millions of people into robots, do you find that fun? Do you realize how many kids relate to that fish swimming upstream in class, never finding their gifts, thinking they are stupid, believing they are useless? Well, the time has come, no more excuses. I call school to the stand and accuse him of killing creativity, individuality, and being intellectually abusive. He's an ancient institution that has outlived his usage. So, Your Honor, this concludes my opening statement, and if I may present the evidence of my case, I will prove it.
Proceed.
Exhibit A. Here's a modern-day phone. Recognize it? Here's a phone from 150 years ago. Big difference, right? Stay with me. Here's a car from today, and here's a car from 150 years ago. Big difference, right? Well, get this. Here's a classroom of today, and here's a class we used 150 years ago. Now, ain't that a shame? In literally more than a century, nothing has changed. Yet you claim to prepare students for the future? But with evidence like that, I must ask, do you prepare students for the future or the past? I did a background check on you and let the record show that you were made to train people to work in factories, which explains why you put students in straight rows, nice and neat, tell them sit still, raise your hand if you want to speak, give them a short break to eat, and for 8 hours a day, tell them what to think. Oh, and make them compete to get an A. A letter which determines product quality, hence grade A of meat. I get it. Back then, times were different. We all have a past. I myself am no Gandhi. But today, we don't need to make robot zombies. The world has progressed. And now we need people who think creatively, innovatively, critically, independently, with the ability to connect. See, every scientist will tell you that no two brains are the same. And every parent with two or more children will confirm that claim. So please explain why you treat students like cookie cutter frames or snapback hats, giving them this one size fits all crap.
Watch your language.
Sorry, Your Honor, but if a doctor prescribed the exact same medicine to all of his patients, the results would be tragic. So many people would get sick, yet when it comes to school, this is exactly what happens, this educational malpractice, where one teacher stands in front of 20 kids, each one having different strengths, different needs, different gifts, different dreams, and you teach the same thing the same way? That's horrific. Ladies and gentlemen, the defendant should not be acquitted. This may be one of the worst criminal offenses ever to be committed. And let's mention the way you treat your employees.
Objection.
Overruled. I want to hear this.
It's a shame. I mean, teachers have the most important job on the planet, yet they're underpaid? No wonder so many students are shortchanged. Let's be honest. Teachers should earn just as much as doctors, because a doctor can do heart surgery and save the life of a kid. But a great teacher can reach the heart of that kid and allow him to truly live. See, teachers are heroes that often get blamed, but they're not the problem. They work in a system without many options or rights. Curriculums are created by policymakers, most of which have never taught a day in their life. just obsessed with standardized tests. They think bubbling in a multiple choice question will determine success. That's outlandish. In fact, these tests are too crude to be used and should be abandoned, but don't take my word for it. Take Frederick J. Kelly, the man who invented standardized testing, who said, and I quote, "These tests are too crude to be used and should be abandoned." Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, if we continue down this road, the results will be lethal. I don't have much faith in school, but I do have faith in people. And if we can customize healthcare, cars, and Facebook pages, then it is our duty to do the same for education, to upgrade it, change it, do away with school spirit, because that's useless. Unless we're working to bring the spirit out of each and every student, that should be our task. No more Common Core. Instead, let's reach the core of every heart in every class. Sure, math is important, but no more than art or dance. Let's give every gift an equal chance. I know this sounds like a dream, but countries like Finland are doing impressive things. They have shorter school days, teachers make a decent wage, homework is non-existent, and they focus on collaboration instead of competition. But here's the kicker, boys and girls. Their educational system outperforms every other country in the world. Other places like Singapore are succeeding rapidly. Schools like Montessori, programs like Khan Academy. There is no single solution, but let's get moving. Because while students may be 20% of our population, they are 100% of our future. So let's attend to their dreams. And there's no telling what we can achieve. This is a world in which I believe. A world where fish are no longer forced to climb trees. I rest my case.
All right, we're back. And if you're listening, hold on one second. Brian and I are about to have a very highly intellectual conversation, so don't run through a wall quite yet. Just wait just a second. So, Brian, I'm back with you. First, before we get going, just tell us a little bit about yourself, what you're doing.
So currently I'm about to be a sophomore going to Concordia College in Moorhead next year, majoring in business management and marketing, but hopefully want to pursue something specifically with sports management, maybe working for the Minnesota Twins or the Vikings organization.
That sounds cool. So tell me, why do you give a crap about education?
So I grew up, obviously went to Wilmer, and my senior year, I got to do something really special, part of a program called CEO, and it basically taught me that I just felt like our school system is completely broken, and we do a lot of things that our past like parents and grandparents did when they were growing up, but it's just not beneficial in today's society.
I agree. I agree. So then let's get into talking about Prince EA. I sued the school system. So tell me, just give me a minute on what you thought about that 5-plus minute video.
So first off, I want to say probably my favorite video on YouTube, actually. I just feel like it hits so many good points, and he just gets straight to it, and he's just very critical on his words. He also just the way he talks, I think, is just super exceptional. It's not like he's just trying to say something. He does it in a very interesting way that I think a lot of kids will actually be wanting to listen to, compared to it's just like some speech. And I just felt like it connected after I went through the program my senior year. After I did the whole CEO thing, I just felt like, wow, this is exactly how I feel. And I just wish this was more of a conversation, because I feel like it's just not talked about.
So yeah, he does a really good job with everything in spoken word, and he's got a lot of subscribers, Prince EA on YouTube. And really, I mean, like, I like this video probably more than any other video because I have a background in education and whatnot, but he has a lot of good videos. I don't know if you've watched some of his other ones.
Yeah, I watched, actually, I think I've seen probably, I don't want to say all of them, but I've seen a ton of them. I just watched, actually just yesterday, I just watched for the first one. I can't remember what the name of the video is, but basically he's it's about the school system as well, and he's basically explaining why school has been not beneficial to kids nowadays, and just the problems that's with it. So basically he's kind of elaborating more on the I sued the school system a little bit more.
So tell us a little bit about CEO and that whole deal.
So CEO was a class that I got to do my senior year. It ran throughout the whole year, and it started at 7:15 in the morning, 45 minutes before regular high school started, and went till 8:45. We met at a different business every single day, and basically there's three main projects that we did. first one was the badge project, which we basically created a badge with just our name tag on it. However, first day of class, we walk in the room. Our professor, Tyler Gerking, asks us, all right, like, you guys going to create a badge? I'm going to leave the room, and you guys got to figure it out. And basically what that taught me is just you really have to get down to it. You have to start making connections with other people and just really start working on things. And the amount of connections I made throughout the entire year was just insane. The next big thing was our dinner event that took place the 1st of February, and that was super cool. Raised around $14,000 for the program. And it just, again, you really have to contact all these different businesses. I was in charge of the sales team, which is something I really learned to love. And probably the coolest thing is at the end of the year, we get to start our own business. So I was co-founder of Clutch Hats with Blake Thomas. And we did that for the end of our senior year, and it went to summer and then kind of died because we realized everyone in college is broke and can't afford hats.
So, I mean, I like that a lot. I like CEO, just the whole idea behind hands-on, figure-it-out type of learning. And, I mean, I really consider doing it, but I was kind of a band nerd. I think you know that.
Yeah.
So being a band nerd kind of hurt my chances of doing that because 8 to 9:30, I liked blowing an instrument and making stuff happen. And now I'm in a marching band, so have a good time. So then let's get into talking about I Sued the School System. So I'm going to go through, talk about some lines, then we'll talk about some things going on right now in the world. No sports, so we're not going to talk about any sports, if you're wondering. So first things first, I'm going to go through some lines, first of all. So here's one line. Exhibit A, here's a modern-day phone. Recognize it. Now here's a phone from 150 years ago. Big difference, right? Stay with me. Here's a car from today. Here's a car from 150 years ago. Big difference, right? We'll get this. Here's a classroom of today. And here's a class we used 150 years ago. And then it looks the exact same, whereas the phone and the car were drastically different. So tell me, first of all, what you think about that. And then I'll maybe rant about what I think about that.
Yeah, so probably one of my favorite little sequences throughout the entire little clip, just because it just showcases that everything has been changing throughout the last 100 years, 200 years. We're continuing to evolve and create new things. However, when it comes to the schooling system, we just continue to do everything the exact same way. And I just have a problem with that because in today's society, I was just having a conversation with my dad actually about this today, and I told him how, you know, some of the basic things that we do every day and we focus on trying to remember like how the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell and stuff like that. To be frank, like most people think or forget about that stuff right after they leave high school, and it's not really beneficial once they get out of it because we have a phone on us. Most of us have that on us 24/7, so you can always look those things up. Compared to now, we just need to get more innovative on how we teach and what we're learning, because that's really what we need in today's society.
I feel like one of the things about what, you nailed it. One of the things is, and not to get too far into it, because this is going to be something we'll talk about a little later, but things like critical thinking and problem solving are things that, and I mean, I'm going to sound like Elon Musk, there's things that a high school diploma doesn't show. There's things that a college degree doesn't show. But I feel like we need to get to the point in public education where that is something that happens. Because we need to be teaching these things in schools. Because, to be frank, there's some kids, they don't have parents. They're not going to learn how to think critically at home or anywhere else. And if we think from a broader macro perspective, we need to be thinking about what do we want our people to be like in 50 years. Do we want people who are able to memorize facts and then dump them out in the trash? Or do we want people that are going to figure things out and invent the next car or invent the next smartphone or invent the next thing that me and you have no clue what it is going to be? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That type of a thing. And it's just something that we're not at right now. And I hate to sound like a crazy conservative libertarian, which is what I'm going to sound like for the next minute or so. But we got to think that a lot of it comes down to the private sector versus the public sector. It's cutthroat. A lot of these car companies don't succeed. Like, I saw a stat, and since they've been formed, there's two American car companies that haven't gone under. Do you know what they are?
I'd probably say, I feel like Tesla's got to be one of them.
Yep, Tesla's one of them.
And I want to say Ford is the other one, right?
Brian got both of them. Tesla and Ford haven't gone bankrupt. Ford makes great cars, and Tesla is making cars where I can sit in my driver's seat and not do a thing. I can sit here and not do a thing. My mom thinks I'm crazy for thinking that's cool. But let me tell you, if I have kids at some point, which would probably be within the next 20 years, you would think, I don't think I'm going to teach my kids how to drive. That's how fast that I think it's going to come. And at some point or another, not in this episode, but we'll get to talk to him about Andrew Yang and how that's going to completely change our world and how that you should definitely go and buy Tesla stock. But the whole point of it is that in the industry of car companies or in a phone company, if you don't do well, you don't make any money. But the reality is, that's not how it works in public schools. And I mean, it sounds bad, and I think public schools are great, but we need to find a better way around it. And I don't think that politicians telling teachers what to do is the way to make it happen. I mean, someday I see myself maybe being a politician, and I'll maybe have a background in education. But a lot of those people, they have no clue in education. So what business does some guy who maybe has an MBA and he runs a successful business and he's a legislator, what business does he have telling a guy who has a master's or a doctorate in education? Why should he be telling that guy what to do? You know what I mean?
Yeah, like I totally agree. I was actually just I was just talking about this, and for instance, like our current governor Walz, who actually does have a background in education, which is I feel like a little more rare.
Yeah.
I feel like it usually doesn't happen as much. But I feel like for like I would say I don't know the number, but if I just had to guess, I would say probably at least 75% of politicians who make those rules for the education system literally have never taught a day in their life. They don't know what kids are going through, and all they know is that they completed high school 20, 30 years ago, and they're like, okay, that's how it's got to be. Like, we still need standardized tests. We still need all of these things that were so irrelevant a time period ago that just nowadays is just, I mean, it's kind of bogus, to be honest.
No, you nailed it right on the head. And then you talk about the standardized tests. First of all, we can just talk about the standardized tests, the added stress and anxiety that you put on all those students, basically throwing away 3 class days where people can be teaching. And you hit the nail on the head right on about how JD, like if you look at what politicians have, they have JDs, they have law degrees. They don't have a background in education. But these are the people that are making the laws. They have no business doing it other than that they have the power to do it. So why should we let them do it?
I feel like, that's the struggle I've been having is I don't agree we should let them. I just feel like they get to because they do have that power because, you know, we did vote them into office, which is really unfortunate because, I mean, if it was just down to me and I could make the decision, yeah. I just wish that teachers, like, collectively could make.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I hate to sound like a conservative libertarian, but deregulate it. Let the teacher. I have way more faith in my dad who teaches English or my brother who teaches math or someday me who hopefully teaches to figure out a lesson plan because they went to school for education than I do some guy who lives a couple hours away telling them what to do. And that comes back to another line. And I forget what it is. I don't have it right here in front of me, but he says something like, I don't have much faith in school, but I do have faith in teachers. And another conversation that we're not going to get into, but I feel like that's the whole thing that I feel like about police officers is it's the same type of thing. Because if you look at the systems, there's a lot of things in the system that you can talk about need to be fixed. But in general, the overwhelming majority, both the police officers and teachers, are good. They're good people
for sure.
Who are out there to do good things. But there's things in the system that need to change.
Totally agree. I feel like, obviously we just had the major thing that happened with George Floyd and just a terrible thing. And there's definitely cases where there's horrible events that occur, but we need to talk about more of the majority, and the majority just simply says that that's not why, I mean, you look at the people who become police officers. I have plenty of my parents' friends have become police officers. My best friend's dad is a police officer. And he does it because he wants to help people, not because he wants to, you know, screw people out of their life. Like, that's not really why people become police officers in the first place. And that's the same thing for teachers. Teachers become teachers because they want to help the next generation. They want to be there for kids growing up.
And stay tuned on that. On that police officer, that might be another podcast that we could do.
That is
maybe
very
I could get someone else on it if you're not interested. But
that is very true.
That is definitely something that we are going to get to talking to. And then I just like all the things about like the interjections with like watch your language. Those are my favorite things. But then another great line that I like, and this isn't one that I told you about. But if a doctor prescribed the exact same medicine to all of his patients, the results would be tragic. So many people would get sick. Yet when it comes to school, this is exactly what happens. Tell me what you think about that.
Yeah, I just think it just, I mean, like, just look at the line. Obviously, we do the same thing over and over again for every single kid. We don't really look at who they are, what they're going through, what their home life is like. We're just like, all right, this is the information that you need to learn, and we just need you to rebuke it on a piece of paper so that it looks good on paper and it looks like we're doing a good job as an entire state. And that's just, I mean, if you look at it, if a doctor just came in and had 30 kids who all were sick, but obviously they each had a different sickness, and he's like, all right, all of you just go take some ibuprofen, and you'll be good tomorrow. I'm like, that's just not how it's going to work.
And here's my thing about this, too. Is I don't know who decided whatever that we take 6 credits of math and we take 8 credits of communications or English or whatever, but I think it's a load of garbage whoever came up with that, because I don't know, what do you think are the most important skills that you learn? Let's leave out CEO, but like from your, we'll call them traditional classes in the high school, what are the most important things you learned, do you think?
Are you talking about like if I were to mention a specific class, or are you just saying like just regular skills?
Like a skill.
Okay. I would say probably the biggest skills I think that I learned, a little bit in the high school, but not even a ton, would be, I feel like public speaking is a huge one. And I feel like probably the, second biggest is, I don't know. I guess I struggle with that a lot because I didn't learn some of the skills that I learned. I just kind of,
So that's a good point, right? But I agree, public speaking is one of the top ones.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to think that writing is an important one. Just idea of like how we're sitting right here, a lot of it comes back sure to public speaking, but also to writing. Just the idea of like figuring out how to form thoughts, you mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's an important thing that I think writing does, even then when you're speaking. I think some simple reading, but I don't think reading should be important in the way reading is, like comprehension type of thing.
Yeah.
I think I look back at The Great Gatsby and stuff. The Great Gatsby is a wonderful book talking about how sometimes people can be horrible and shallow
mm-hmm.
and that type of thing. And it talks about some great things, but that's not what I remember from The Great Gatsby. I don't know about you. We both read it in high school.
I mean, I'm not a big reader, but the main part I remember from The Great Gatsby is just more of like the backstabbing, but I don't really think of like the comprehending behind it and the comprehension of the book. I just remember certain parts that kind of happened.
Yeah. And then, I mean, I'm biased, obviously. I'm studying poli-sci and economics, but I think that there are too many people in this world that have no clue what is going on. Like, I've got a stat. I did some research because of another segment that I might be doing at some point. But there's something like 26% of the population can name the 3 branches of government. So we got legislative, judicial, and executive branch. So, and that's ridiculous in its own right. And there's another thing about like Mike Pence, like only like 40 or 50% of the population knows who Mike Pence is, knows who the Vice President of the United States is, one of the most powerful people in the entire world. That's just naming things, let alone talking about things like what's your stance on Medicare for All, or what do you think about like raising taxes? And like, these are conversations that we need to talk about, because I mentioned earlier like what we want our citizens to be like. I don't know about you, but I want citizens who know how to vote and know what's going on in their world and know what's going on in their government. But I feel like the reality is that's not true. In a good presidential election, 60% of people vote.
That's horrible.
I don't know. That's and like...
It's just we create a system where, in the world of social studies, there are some good things. We need to learn about our history, and we need to learn about basic things like that, and basic things about economics. Economics, I think, is very important. But then we don't go enough in-depth into what's happening right now. Why should I care about what's happening right now? That's cool that you told me about what happened in 1865, but what about 2020? I don't know who my own vice president is, but I'm supposed to care about what Abraham Lincoln did in 1865?
Yeah, I feel like you and me have a lot of different conversations about politics, obviously, all the time. And I would consider myself like decently educated, but I'm not even close where I think I like a normal person should be. I've picked up stuff, a lot of stuff from you, honestly, is where I get a lot of my information from. And the fact that if you went through our high school and maybe like, I don't know the number, but if I had to guess, like maybe 1 in 10 people would really know like what's going on.
Definitely.
Exactly.
And I feel like the other thing, like we can differ on opinions and talk about it, but I feel like something that social studies should talk more about is like, being able to have conversations. You see all these things about how we're more polarized than ever and how Democrats hate Republicans and Republicans hate Democrats. I feel like that's something, I mean, maybe I'm too optimistic, but if our education system is able to really teach how to have tough conversations, like George Floyd and police brutality and systemic racism, they're not easy conversations,
mm-hmm.
but they're conversations that need to be had. And I feel like they're not had enough from a young level, so then they just don't happen.
Well, yeah, and I feel like, I mean, you could even go farther from the young level. I feel like just adults don't even necessarily want to talk
about it. Well, yeah, it starts from a young age, and then it never comes.
Like, it just never happens, like, in the future. And one of the things I just wanted to redirect real quick about, having those tough conversations is, when we look at, like, schools and stuff like that, like, and what they're teaching us, you know, a great, like, history is good, like, we need to learn some math here and there, but one of the biggest problems I've had is they don't teach us, like, what we want to do with our life exactly, and it's more like, we're supposed to make this decision right after we graduate about where we want to go to college, drop $20,000 in the first year, and make a decision on what we want to do for the rest of life, but I don't know how you're supposed to know that when no one's ever really told you.
So there's a few good points you make there. First of all, the one about like getting more hands-on learning and stuff. So I don't know where it should start, but I look at my first year of college, way more free time, right?
Yeah, for sure.
We can just say that without a doubt.
For sure.
More free time. Some people, they get fat. Some people, they drink too much. Some people end up really good, right?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I think it would be a good idea if we taught like that at a younger age where they have parents that maybe can control them a little bit, right? Because
yep.
obviously when you go out to college, you're on your own. You're able to get fat and drunk.
Yep.
If we started that at 16 or something, what if we went 8:30? First of all, 8 o'clock is too early.
Agreed.
And you look at any of the research, and people in the world of education agree. If you look at any of the research, starting a half an hour to an hour later makes worlds of change in things like mental health, in education and how much they learn, and in how far on they go in education. So like if you start at 9, you're more likely to go on to college and
yeah.
things like that. So first of all, the going later, starting later in the day is a no-brainer. But imagine if we went 8:30 to 12:30 and then you can go home, you can get help on your homework, you can do an internship. I did an internship in high school, but I was one of few that was able to do an internship during the day. So you can do an internship. You can, if you really like baseball, you can maybe play a little bit more baseball. You can lift weights. You can get a job and start working. If you're a blue-collar worker, you can start working on that. There's just so many more opportunities that I feel like if you look at the numbers on things like people changing majors. I changed majors. I thought for sure, since my sophomore, junior year, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. But then I got out into the relatively real world, still not the real world,
mm-hmm.
and everything changed. So I've been rambling for too long, but tell me what you think about that.
Yeah, for sure. I just feel like, again, like what we were saying is just, you don't really get put in the real world. And one of the things that I want to bring up is, actually, I feel like I've mentioned this to you, but I don't remember when the last time I talked to you about it was. I learned about this school that I believe is in San Diego, California, but don't quote me on that. Is it's basically a school that once, I want to say high school, they learn about, you know, they still do math and they still do social studies, science, English, but they do them in a completely different way. And how it works is, for instance, I'm gonna illustrate on something that involves social studies, art, and engineering. About kids, when they get to freshman and sophomore, they're really interested in engineering gears and how that sort of things works. And how their social studies portion works is they actually make this giant design art piece where it's all of these different gears that spin and move together, which is very complicated. I would have absolutely no clue how to do. But in the process, it demonstrates our past history of the last 100 years, and then also mentions very current events. And that was something I saw, and I was just like, wow, that is unbelievable that someone 4 years younger than me could come up with that and do something that incredible. And that's really, a school like that was just something where I really felt, I was like, wow, they are really preparing their students for more of the real world and showing them, like, you can do stuff with different subjects.
No, I totally agree, and I think that there needs to be a certain amount of job preparedness, or whatever you want to call it, career readiness type of programs in high school. And I think there's a lot of great, if you want to go into like 2-year type of community college programs, there's a lot of that that it isn't really put on kids as much as I think it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Right, there should be way more of that. But then I guess kind of where I'm more focused on, obviously maybe going to be a social studies teacher, is just the things that we can teach you that maybe don't directly, like, obviously, technically, if you think about it, knowing about my government isn't going to help me in my job as a welder. You know, like, yeah. Technically, it doesn't matter. But I feel like we understand as a society that there's things that we just need our citizens to know.
Yeah.
And I feel like biology, maybe to a certain slightest degree, is true. We want to know the basics of the organs.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to know the basics of the reproductive system and things like that. But I feel like you mentioned, obviously the mitochondria. I feel bad for the mitochondria. They always get bad.
They do.
Whenever the education gets brought up. But it's true. And there's just too much in-depth in areas that don't need to be in-depth. Like I learned so much about the world of math. And even as an economics minor, I feel like I learned way too much that's just completely unnecessary for me. And I could have been spending that time elsewhere learning important things that could help me further into my career. If I was taking more public speaking classes instead of calc, think about how much more that would help me.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, that was one of the greatest things I loved about CEO, is it really taught me how to be a great public speaker. Without that, I was terrible at public speaking before, and I was horrified of it. And obviously, I think, you know, to a certain extent, we do need all of those little subjects. You know, we do need some math, we do need some English, some history, and all the things like that. But I feel like at a certain point, one of the positions I've proposed a lot is, I think if you look at a study, once you get to after advanced, I think it's after algebra 1, you don't need a lot of the algebra after that.
Totally. And like, there's definitely a place for people to take like calculus. Like if I'm being honest, I'm in calc class right now for economics. It's borderline if I need it, but I can see why they think you're an economics minor. We need you to have a better understanding of numbers. So I get that. But if we're talking about a kid who's just loading up on AP exams and he's going into something in liberal arts, there's no reason for him to take like calc 2 or something just to boost up his high school like accolades or whatever.
Yeah.
He should be spending that time elsewhere getting actually prepared for being a citizen, for being a father, for being a husband, for being whatever his job's going to be. Things like that are way more important, and we need to push those things. So unless you got something to add, we're going to start moving on to looking in some current events. So obviously, when the COVID-19 era, I'm going to be teaching about this 20 years from now. Yeah. I hope you know.
They're going to write a movie about 2020.
They're going to be like, Mr. Courtney, did you seriously go? Yeah, I actually sat at my house for like 3 months. I just didn't leave. You know, I had to ask my mom if I could go to the grocery store. So, but Harvard announced today that all course instruction will be taught online for the whole 2020-2021 academic year. And then, as a side note, undergrad tuition will remain at $49,653. That's just a chunk of change, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I got that sitting in my back pocket.
So tell me what you think about that.
I feel like there's no other way to put it, except that's just absolutely absurd. I mean, if you're going to pay the same amount of money to not see these glorified professors who everyone, obviously, Harvard is considered one of the top schools in the nation, if not the world. And you're going to pay the same amount of tuition for them to email you and maybe go into a Zoom call like twice a week. Like, I just don't see that as beneficial. And also, just you're basically just completely destroying the students because they're just not getting what they deserve.
I feel like if you just look at higher ed in general, it's overpriced and numbers are absurd and it's just made up. And if you look at, like, it's skyrocketed way past tuition in the last 20 to 30 years. It's just crazy. Since my brother's been born or whatever, 94 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I talked to my dad, and I'm like, Dad, how much debt did you have? And he's like, oh, no, I didn't have debt. You know, I just worked at a grocery store in the summer, was able to pay for most of it. My dad helped me out with a little of it, and I was fine. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I just worked an 11.5-hour day today. A lot of weeks I'll work close to 40 hours. I make a decent amount of money for a 20-year-old kid. I've got some solid debt. And I mean, I don't think that we can argue that education is still pretty good, but it's not like education has doubled in its value or like teachers are getting twice as good as they were 30 years ago. That's just something that's not happening. What's happening is we're adding administrators, we're adding fluff, we're making these schools like amusement parks, when really they should be schools and we should be teaching kids. It shouldn't be about, I mean, a certain amount, you can have a good time in college, but from a college's perspective, they need to be thinking about preparing you, making you good in your job so that hopefully you can come back and look good for that school, but also do it in an affordable way. And I don't know what government, now I'm looking like a Democrat. I don't know what government can do, but government has to step in and do something, don't they? They can't just let it keep happening.
Yeah, I feel like it just is going up too much. And honestly, you know, something you can just bounce right off of that really easily is you're looking at the number of students who attend college is starting to go actually down, I feel like, because there's a lot of students who are just saying,
like, what's the point?
Like, why would I just drop myself $50,000 in debt over the, and that's if you like get lucky, like that's a lot of scholarship money you better get still, but let's just assume $50,000 when I can go to trade school and be a welder and be making 70 to 80 grand within 2 years.
Like, exactly. What? Well, and there's nothing wrong with being a welder, definitely.
Yeah.
But to a certain degree, we also need to look at like the economic side of it,
mm-hmm.
right? And all of this debt, like we're over $1 trillion in student loan debt. That's gonna start coming back. I mean, obviously we can talk about, we're probably in something like a bad recession or a depression right now.
Yeah.
And we can talk about that. But that's gonna really come back and bite us in the butt. How you got these, my brother's 24, he doesn't have a house. My other brother's 25, doesn't have a house. Got student loan payments. What money does he have to get a mortgage? So at a certain point, that's going to hurt everything because they're not going to be buying, they're not going to be putting money in the stock market. They're not going to be putting money towards a mortgage. They're not going to be taking vacations. Why? Because they're putting it all towards this dumb little paper that let them get the job that they have.
Yeah. And I mean, like, obviously you're going to have, obviously you're still going to have, even if it went down, you're still going to have a little bit of debt. And I'm not trying to say that debt is necessarily a horrible thing because, I mean, people have debt throughout their entire lives. Car debt, housing debt, you know, you're going to have debt. But I think the issue is when you're paying, I mean, I'm just going to take a look at my perspective. I originally was going to the College of St. Scholastica in Duluth. And based off, I calculated my interest payment. If I had the same money every year, which is about what I was going to have to pay $23,000 a year, my student loan debt every month would be $1,162 roughly. I don't know why I said 62, but I'm just estimating roughly around that. And like, that's a ton of money. I mean, that's like Like, that's, and that's over, you know, you're not paying that back within, you know, 4 years.
It's crazy. And we talk about the online, and, like, I don't think it's worth discussing. Like, obviously, the college needs to do what's in the best interest of the health of the students, and they shouldn't bring kids back if they think that they're not going to be able to bring kids back safely. And I can't speak on behalf of a school in Massachusetts because I don't know what's going on there. I don't know the situation.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, college kids are close together, and just a dorm in general seems scary, right?
Yeah.
Because if one kid gets it in a dorm, they're all going to get it.
Yeah, see you, kids.
So we can't talk about that. But we can talk about how they're going to have online class, and you're going to charge them the exact same price? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's just, I don't understand why you would do that. I just feel like there has to be some sort of back money, or like something in return for the students, or just a deleted amount of money, because it just doesn't make sense. You're paying the same amount for not what you originally signed up for.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And so that's going to be it for that. We're going to take a short break because we've been talking for too long. We're going to come back with one more current event. And that'll be it for the first episode of Courtney Convos. Awesome. So we are back. Hopefully there was like an ad in there. I don't know. Hopefully like someone sponsored us or something, but I don't think that has happened yet. But anyways, we got some important things to talk about, but there's only one more thing we're going to talk about related to education. So we're going to talk about the Supreme Court of the United States ruled 5-4, a strong split between the 5 conservatives and the 4 liberals. They ruled 5-4 that Montana's exclusion of religious schools from state scholarship program funded by tax credits violates the federal constitution. So Brian, something tells me that you kind of in the slightest amount know what I'm talking about right now. So I'm going to kind of just explain it a little bit for the listeners who have less of a clue about it than you do. So basically what it's saying is in a state like Minnesota, we don't have generally be called like a school voucher system where you can take money. Say, so like for example, in a public school in Minnesota, your high school will get like something like $6,500 for you to attend that school. But instead, in other oftentimes conservative states, but now liberals are kind of jumping on with it, they will say, well, hold on, how about we just give you this money and you decide where you go to school? So Montana kind of had a program like that with private schools, but the only thing is they couldn't be a religious private school. So it just had to be a generic, you know, private school. It couldn't be a Catholic school, couldn't be a Lutheran school, or whatever. But so then some private religious schools in Montana said, hold on, we don't like that. So then they brought it up to their legal authorities and whatnot, and it all went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the religious schools. So what does this mean? This means that in the world of public education, it took a big hit, because there's going to be more people going to these private religious schools now. And I don't know about you, but I think private schools are great, but we need to make sure to maintain our public education. So tell me, first of all, that you understand what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do agree, and I understand what you're talking about.
So my thing about public education, it separates the haves from the have-nots if that we go away from public education. We go to public education, you and I, our parents did all right, we go to kids. We go to school with kids who parents really didn't do very well. We go to school with kids whose parents did much better than ours. That's the reality of it. And there's something about having a school where people meet people from everywhere that turns into a world where people are able to understand people from everywhere. Because, like, I mean, Wilmer, as far as schools in Minnesota, is, like, literally one of the most diverse racially in the entire state. Like we're going down to, I think white is only about 45-48% maybe. Maybe we should have checked that before I said that, but I think it's like 45-48%. And the remaining 52 is mostly mixed up between Hispanic and East African. I mean, obviously you know that because you went to school with me, but it's just something about, and it goes back to like raising good citizens. You look at great schools academically, like say Edina, which is obviously public. Or then you look at private schools, which oftentimes can be more white and more rich. That, not to make a generalization, but oftentimes it can end up like that. Sometimes they get in their little world and they don't know what's going on. You know, you and I mean, I played soccer with a lot of East African kids and a lot of Hispanic kids. I at least have a clue what's going on in a person's life like theirs, and I can have some sympathy for some things that other people go through that I don't go through, and whatever that may mean to you. But the thing that private schools do, and private schools can do a lot of things great, sometimes they can't do that great. And I don't know if you have anything to add right there before I keep rambling.
So I'll just say on the point of, you know, kind of hitting on the diversity of Wilmer, obviously where we both went, I just think that's actually such a crucial thing to actually have, just because it just teaches you how to connect with so many different cultures and so many different people with completely different backgrounds than yours. Obviously, I didn't play soccer, but I was in basketball, and that was mixed with a lot of East Africans as well. And it was just kind of cool to get that like on my background and just kind of have that in my brain, because I know when I went off to college, I had a few students who went to a few private colleges who I was classmates with, and they were like, "Holy cow! Like, I've never actually," and this is gonna sound terrible, but I've never been, you know, around someone who's from East Africa or who's from, you know, Honduras or someone like that. And I'm like, I was around that every day, and it's normal to me. Like, I don't know why you think it's weird, and it shouldn't be weird, because that's what I feel like the United States is. We're known for being a very diverse country.
And we talk about all these things that need to happen with public school, and we both have, I mean, obviously in my opinion and your opinion, we have great points as to things we need to do to fix public education. But the reality is, aside from the academics, which obviously there are important things too, why should I not just homeschool my kid? Because there is so much more to school than simply learning math and learning science. There's a social aspect of understanding how to have conversations with people, how to make friends, how to be a good teammate. Obviously with sports is an important thing that you don't get through homeschooling. And oftentimes a homeschooled kid will get into the real world and they don't know what they're doing. Or a private school kid to a lesser degree, but still to some degree, and then they don't know what they're doing. That's why we need to do what we can to make sure, and I mean, obviously, that's not what the Supreme Court's ruling on. They're ruling on the Constitution, and I'm not going to argue with them on that. But we need to make sure to do whatever we can to make sure that public education is the way. Yeah.
I totally agree. Totally agree. I feel like you hit on all of the good points, and I just think that when you look at private education compared to public, I don't want to make a rude kind of like generalization towards people with private who go to private schools, because they're not all like this. But you definitely were right. A lot of private schools definitely come of more very wealthy people, and predominantly white, or they're used for some sort of athletic ability even, and that's why they go there. And so they're just kind of, they're sanctioned off in their own little world. And obviously we experienced playing against some private schools through baseball and things. And it's pretty easy to tell that they kind of think they live on their own little island. But then once they get out into the real world, they're like, this is totally different than what I went to high school in.
Yeah, and then I'm going to add in another thing, because obviously I'm a little bit of a policy, politics type of person, is the way that public education is funded. So we don't have it right in front of us, and it varies by the school. But so the way that Wilmer's high school, Wilmer Public Schools, I guess in general, is funded. So there's three locations. You get it from federal money, you get it from state money, and you get it from local money, which the overwhelming majority of local money comes from property taxes. So obviously there's three different things. The federal government gives relatively evenly to different schools, and the only thing that they do is free and reduced lunch they give more for. So obviously we do very well as far as having free and reduced lunch. We are just over 50%, maybe 52% free and reduced price lunch in the high school. And then I think the elementary schools are relatively similar.
Yeah, I believe so.
So that's where federal money goes. State money also has some of the same things, but to a lesser degree as far as how well schools are performing and the levels of income in those areas and how well those areas do financially. Because that, more than anything else, how your parents do financially has probably too big of an impact for my taste, for my heart, as far as how you do academically. You know, that's just sadly what the numbers say. And then the rest of it comes from city local property taxes. So the way that it's set up in Minnesota, and gosh, I should have checked these numbers before we got here, but 65% comes from state taxes, around 25% comes from local property taxes, and around 10% comes from the federal government. Obviously, that all depends on your numbers and whatever, but that's a generally good idea. So what does this mean? This all sounds good, but and we're better than some states, but the problem with that 25%, that local property taxes, is think, who's going to get more money? The places where they already have more money, with the where they have higher property taxes. So if you think about rich suburban areas, who are generally speaking more white than inner city areas, that is still a thing that comes from things like redlining, where people were forced into those areas. So that's just gonna be a spinning wheel. So that 25% is obviously a huge amount, right?
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes that's kind of the difference maker, right? Because sure, you can say it's only 25%, but we're not gonna tell anyone that we want them to only work with 75% of their money, are we? Obviously not. So, like, there's a lot of talk now, obviously, about what needs to happen with systemic racism and whatnot. And people will say, what I agree with, they'll say that property taxes are racist. And it's like, hold on, Zach, you can't just say that property taxes are racist. That doesn't even make any sense. But if you look in general, and now I'm going to look like my Democrat self again, that we need to do a better job of redistributing wealth. Because of all the things that we may disagree on, we need to agree on the fact that everyone needs to have an opportunity. We need to give kids a chance to be better than their parents. Because if we look at our world right now, it's something like only 10% of people will actually jump classes. Like if you look at, I think usually the four classes that they use are lower class, middle class, upper middle class, and the higher class. Only about 10% of people will actually jump classes. So first of all, we need to do more to fix that. But how do we do more to fix that? We do that by giving everyone a chance. And that means that Edina shouldn't get more money just because they have higher property taxes and they have more willingness to spend it. What we need to do, so we take that federal whatever 10%, that's nice, fine, and dandy. But then what we should do is take that remaining 90%, make like all of that be from the state. If you want to do a few little things for your local government, obviously we can't stop you. Like for example, our city is doing a sales tax and we're going to get some nice turf fields and some things like that, which is great. But the overwhelming, and that's not coming from property tax, that's coming from sales tax. But the overwhelming majority should come from the state. And the way that I think it should be done is you take that 90%, you put it in a big pot in St. Paul. And then you take that big pot in St. Paul where everyone has sent their income tax, right? Because that's mostly, all income tax. And then you resend that out to all communities. So Minneapolis North, you got the same chance as Edina. And Minnetonka High School, you got the same chance as whatever other school that is in a predominantly poor area, right? We want to give everyone a chance. And that's got to be what public education is about and what it's supposed to be about. But the problem is we got these policies in place that, to a certain degree, it doesn't matter what the teachers do. It doesn't matter what the principals do. It doesn't matter what the superintendent does. Because we got people sitting there in St. Paul who don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, those are all, I feel like, super good points. The one thing I want to just say real quick that I appreciate the how we're able to talk is me and you may have different viewpoints on some things. Obviously, we have different viewpoints on some policies and how things work, which is going to happen pretty much, I would say, throughout anyone. Obviously, you're going to have, you know, relatively the same things, but you're going to have differences in opinions. And I think that's extremely okay, and you should have differences in opinions because that's what our country is supposed to have. That's how, you know, that's how we have a democracy and such. The one thing I want to say, I would feel like, is one of the problems I've had with, I feel like this is more about, I don't want to say culture, but just like how things are projected, is I feel like some kids who are in those certain communities are kind of told right away, and this could be, they might even be told from their parents, is that they're never going to be able to, you know, get out and get bigger up. And whether the numbers state that or not, being told that as a kid at a super young age, and that's kind of like horrifying, and it kind of just diminishes your, like the get up and kind of sort of like go get it sort of thing. And I feel like we need to be telling these kids, like, we need to be reinsuring them, being like, no, you can go get this. You got to work your butt off. Even if, whether I'm talking about like whether the numbers need to change and we do need to redistribute money more equally, whether that's, you know, you agree with that or don't, I feel like it also starts with being able to say, where you come from, although that has an impact, I believe every kid can go out and they can get it.
No, yeah, I mean, you have a good point. But my thing about it is, I don't think it's so much about that. I don't think that, like, I think there's good teachers in Minneapolis North High School. I think there's good parents in Minneapolis North High School. But sadly, a certain amount of it comes down to the dollars. And we need to do what we can to give those people the dollars they need to have a better chance. Because we can sit here and say that Minneapolis North High School is going to get the same quality teachers as Edina High School. But like with money, that's not how it's going to work. And like, don't get me wrong, I agree that maybe we can say on the fringes, there's times where a poor kid is told he's a poor kid, and he's told that he's going to stay poor, and it stays that way. But, and I mean, I wish it wasn't this way. But the sad thing is, too much of the time, I mean, that's true. And I feel like the good thing, though, is maybe we have different answers to how things need to happen, but I feel like the way that politics needs to change is we need to all be asking the same questions, if that makes sense. Because that doesn't happen enough of the time. We have people who sit here and they talk about dumb things. Like, if I can say, like, they'll talk about immigration and they'll try to pin people against each other on stuff. Or they'll try to pin people against each other on that. How about we just talk about the right question, which is, how do we get the working class to all be able to make money? If you have a full-time job, you should be able to make at least a decent amount of money. How about we figure out how to get people healthcare? I mean, obviously, this isn't a politics podcast. How do we figure out how to get people able to get an education? We need to start asking the same questions. Because, like, I mean, I wouldn't consider myself a Democrat, but I definitely lean left. How do we get ourselves asking the same questions? Because part of the problem in politics, nothing happens, right? No one gets anything done. Part of the problem is that people aren't asking the same questions. How are you going to come to some type of agreement on an answer when you can't even ask the same question?
Well, and I feel like that, I mean, basically exactly what you said, that almost redirects exactly to our point of like the whole education system as a whole, is that we don't ask those questions ever. And if we don't start asking them, like when we're in high school, no one really starts asking them as you go up. It's just a simple, if you're not told about it and you're not asked those questions when you're younger, you never really think about them, and therefore you never really put time into knowing what those questions mean and what possible answers or solutions could be the result of those questions.
Well, Brian, it was a great time talking to you. It is now on to the next day. We talked for over an hour, about an hour, actually. So it is now past midnight. I am tired. I work in the morning. You don't work in the morning, but so let's wrap this up. Thank you for joining me. Great talk about education. We'll probably be back talking about something at some point.
I agree. I think we will. I feel like we work very well together, and thanks for having me. It was a really good time.
Awesome. Thank you, Brian.